Okay, we are back here. I'm Petey Pete, and you are listening to the WGXC Morning Show. And I am elated to have my monthly guest, Sylvia Hassenkopf, on this morning because we have some really seriously important topics to talk about. And Sylvia, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's a little crispy out there today, but it kind of gets the blood flowing.
Yes, this is true. And you, being from Canada, we were talking for a brief moment about Thanksgiving.
Right.
And you were saying that it combines for you, it's really Columbus Day because that's the day.
Canadians actually celebrate Thanksgiving, yes. So it's kind of hard to change, you know, a lifetime of, you know, Thanksgiving's on in October and say, okay, well, it's no longer October. It's now going to be the end of November.
Right.
So some people say I get to have two Thanksgivings, but my mother and most of my family are gone up in Canada now, so I don't go up anymore. So I feel like I'm adrift.
Right. Yeah, I'm not going home for Thanksgiving, but I'll make the best of it and do what I do. It's a lot to be thankful for, so that's what
Indeed.
We have to keep in mind. About that. But this program, we have some interesting topic that we are talking about that you have studied and researched, and it's actually about the KKK.
Yes, indeed. And the KKK, unbeknownst to most people in Greene County, actually had a solid presence here for a number of years, not a long time. They were here in the mid-20s, which is during the second incarnation of the KKK.
And when I was reading a little bit up on this, it had mentioned three claverns.
Yes.
And could you explain what a clavern is to me?
Yeah, the KKK, they were really, you know, wanted to create a kind of like a mystique of their own. So they created their own language. And so a clavern is actually one of their organizations. So it would be akin to like a lodge for the Masons and that sort of thing. So there's three claverns in Greene County, one in Coxsackie, one in Sleepy Hollow, which was a Catskill clavern, and one up in Prattsville.
Okay.
So the important part to recognize is that really the KKK here in Greene County came to prominence during the second incarnation of the Klan. The first one really kicking up after the Civil War when a group of six Confederate veterans of the war got together in 1865 in Pulaski, Tennessee to create the Ku Klux Klan. And they really were, you know, just upset, you know, that the African Americans were free, that the South had to change their way of doing business, let's say. And they created a very violent and very active, for a short period of time, terrorist organization. They're known as the earliest white terrorist organization in America.
Right, in 1865 being the end of the Civil War.
Correct, okay. Correct. And these guys wore just, you know, hand-sewn hoods over their faces with, you know, the eyes and the nose and the mouth cut out. And some of them actually looked like they had ears. It was kind of weird, like a bear's head. But they were like brown cloth. It would be just cloth that was locally available. Nothing like what we see, you know, in a lot of the pictures today of the white robes with the white conical hats, which really came into being during the second incarnation of the Klan.
Okay.
So the first Klan really was active for only about 7-8 years, but their atrocities, their violence, the lynchings, the murders, the things that they were doing just were so atrocious and so frightening to the populace, not just in the South, but also in the North, that the government had to step in. So in 1870 and 1871, the government passed the Force Acts, which allowed them to prosecute the Klan and their crimes and basically led to the disintegration of the KKK in the mid-1870s.
Okay. Now, with groups like this, it's just an abuse of power, and how they thrive is through abuse of power and also abuse of fear. It's to send fear and to achieve power, and that's the destructive habit that they bring to society.
Well, the thing is, I think, in my opinion, from what I've read, the Klan of the 60s, 1860s and 70s, you know, they really were angry at losing the power over, you know, the African-American slaves. You know, all of a sudden in December of 1865, all slaves in the United States were free. And that being the case, all of a sudden, all this free, cheap labor, where basically folks could do what they wanted to their property, was no longer in place. So you had all these black sharecroppers, you had black families who were creating businesses, and you know, a lot of the white population in the South really just did not agree with it. They did not view African Americans as equal, as intelligent, as capable of running a business or even managing their own lives. So, you know, this knee-jerk reaction of the KKK was to put everybody back in their place. So they used tactical terrorist types of, actions to keep even freed African Americans in their place. You know, lynchings was common, intimidation, you know, threatening violence, the noose, things like that. These things were very common in the South, right up until almost the present day. How many times have you read in the last year or two where a noose has been, you know,
put at a church or
even
might
today?
Be. Yeah. Yep, yep.
And that is classic Klan intimidation.
Right. And with the Klan, the one that you're speaking about, a lot of our Greene County hardworking, you said forebears were active in that.
Yeah. And I think what's really important, because I gave a lecture last week on this topic in a community here in Greene County. And, you know, the person that was organizing it had let the folks know who owned the building that, you know, that I was doing this talk on the KKK. And the sign out front, what it said is local history lecture, Sylvia Hosenkopf. The fear to even today want to address the fact that the KKK actually ever existed or even to mention the word in whatever context is really very strong. And so that even our local community was like, wow, it's so brave that you're going to talk about them. And I'm going, that's very interesting that people would look at this as a brave act to talk about it, but it is our history.
I know, and well, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but even me bringing it up that was going to be on the program today, I mean, it is. It's a mixed bag of feelings that go with that, but it's true that you have to remember your history, and you have to point that out because it was there and it was a central part of our history.
It is. And the thing is, I don't know who said it, but if you don't learn from history, you're destined to repeat it.
Yep.
And unfortunately, at the end of this particular conversation that we're having, I mean, people will see very scary parallels with the rhetoric that's coming out of DC these days. It's the same language.
Right.
That was used during the Klan's second incarnation. And it's really important to understand our history and to understand what the second incarnation was, because it really was quite different for the most part than the first and the third incarnation. Now, nobody really knows how many men belonged to the first one, you know, the one from 1865 to the 1870s. It was such a covert type of organization, and it was really running under the radar. They didn't do membership drives and things like that. People just belonged. So nobody knows really how many people belonged to that first one. But there's some very clear ideas as to who belonged to the second one, because it has got to be one of the best marketing campaigns I have ever seen from the early 20th century. It's like absolutely incredible how they put this together.
Well, even with Hollywood, I mean, wasn't the first movie in what was the
Birth of a Nation
in
1915 by D.W. Griffith.
Right. I mean, even that in itself was so slanted toward that to promote fear and about the white man and the white woman and that they were being violated, and it was so twisted in so many different respects. And that was the first movie that we had here in America.
Yes, and actually, cinematically, it is considered to this day a masterpiece. If you look at the mechanics of how that movie was put together, it's absolutely incredible. But the message is anathema to us all. Go ahead.
I'm stretching out a little farther, but also even with drugs, today was propagated that it was the black man that was with the drugs, and it's been such a problem today. The drug on war is such a sham that's going on, and that has led into, and that was all because of, and it wasn't about the marijuana or whatever, it was about the paper, it was about, you know, that they didn't want hemp, and I could go into, that's a whole nother story, but once again, that was slanted racially, and look at all the problems that it's still causing us.
Oh, of course. And if you go back to, you know, Birth of a Nation in 1915, it really portrayed African-American men as unintelligent, as sexually aggressive towards white women. And yet at the same time, it portrayed the KKK as being this kind of heroic force that rides in to save the day. And so that, you know, white America was going to protect everybody from, you know, the black man. So that came out in early to mid 1915. And by November 25th, a small group of people, which included 15 hooded charter members of a rejuvenated KKK, as well as two elderly members of an original Klan, held a meeting on Stone Mountain near Atlanta and actually lit a crude cross and burned it there. And that is considered the beginning of the second incarnation of the KKK.
Okay.
And so they think that the impetus to allow that to happen was that movie. And I think that's really an important point because it is rhetoric. It is what we allow to happen in society at a higher level that fuels people's permissions to act, you know, with bigotry and with racism.
And I think that's important. It isn't just an African-American situation. It's mm-hmm. also the Catholics, the Jews, minorities, all that was also inclusive in that. So, I mean, in so many different ways, it reached out and it really capitalized on the minorities of the United States of America.
And that's an important point as to why folks from Greene County and from right across the country, because actually it is estimated between 3 to 6 million people actually belonged to the KKK in the 20s.
Wow.
Which is an enormous amount of people. But the Klan was very clever in their marketing strategy. Their slogan was basically 100% Americanism.
Okay.
They position themselves as defenders of virtue, as champions of Christian morals, and as the protectors of white womanhood. So these are all like slogans they used in their literature and in their speeches. They basically restricted membership to folks who were American born, and they were white, and they were Protestants. Their targets of really their twisted hatred and bigotry were Jews, Catholics, African Americans, communists, and foreign immigrants, as well as bootleggers.
Bootleggers.
The Klan supported wholeheartedly the 18th Amendment of the United States Constitution.
Okay.
So they kind of positioned themselves in the media of the time, which was really, you know, the newspaper, that they were the defenders of all the things that made America great.
Right.
And without them, it would fall apart. And that was kind of their message. And they were very, very good at putting together propaganda that pushed that message forward. And so people have said to me, well, you know, we've got these farmers up in Windham. We've got, you know, small business owners in Catskill. How in the world did they get involved in this?
Right.
And it basically comes down to one really interesting and rather innovative method that they used to reach out to the community. And that was that they would reach out to the Protestant ministers in the communities.
Okay.
And they would offer these ministers free membership in the Klan, as well as special positions within the Klan organization if they would allow them to come in and preach to their congregation.
And also, I'm sure that at that point, too, they also diluted or twisted the Bible to fit their needs, to have reason why they would, you know, set out against minorities and that they were less human and...
Well, you know, I don't know that personally. I mean, I've never heard a full speech from back then. But what they did is they had a number of symbols that represented the Klan. And one of them was the Bible. They kind of hijacked Christianity by hijacking the cross. And then they hijacked America by hijacking the flag. And they used the American flag and they used the burning cross and the Bible as symbols of their righteousness. And
well,
that's what people actually were drawn to. But they did have flyers. I mean, they actually had mail outs, which shocked me in the 20s that people were doing mass mailings to homes. And one of them, they wanted to explain their regalia. So basically they said, the Bible is the most important symbol of the Klan. It is always found open at the 12th chapter of the Romans in every clavern of the Klan. Righteousness as its aim and eternal life as its end. It is a daily guide to right living. The book of books and reveals the only true God.
Well, that's what I meant by twisting the Bible in their sense to gain their power and their elitism above minorities. But okay,
Then the cross, they said the fiery cross of the Klan is a symbol of sacrifice and service and a sign of Christian religion. The Klan has added the fire to the cross to signify that Christ is the light of the world. As light drives away darkness and gloom, so does knowledge dispel evil, ignorance, and superstition. So by the fire of Calvary's cross, Klansmen mean to purify and cleanse their virtues by burning out their vices with the fire of his word. I mean, for the strongly Protestant communities around here, these are words they understood. These are words that they agreed with. These are words that rang a bell in their soul. They said, yes, the Bible is the center of our life, and the Christian cross is how we lead our daily lives. These were strongly Methodist communities, and Lutheran, and Baptist, these very strong religious backgrounds and families in those days. But there were other symbols that they also used. The water is symbolic of the purity of life and the unity of purpose of Klansmen. As water is useful to human life, so do Klansmen strive to be useful to humanity. As drops of water mingle and intermingle, this becoming one solid mass, so are Klansmen united with each other, one solid body of Klancraft.
Wow.
Do you see the use of words?
Right.
They're very, very, whoever wrote this, very cleverly put together words that would resonate within the average person. They also explain their robes. Klansmen wear a robe of white to signify that they do not judge men by the clothes they wear and to conceal the difference in their clothing as well as in their personality. There is no rich or poor, high or low in Klancraft.
That is such a lie. It's such a...
We know that today with the 50-50 vision we have, right?
Right. I mean, you can look at it. It's for fear and it's for not actually showing yourself and it's for... just a, like a dominating figure. I mean, that is so...
But if you think about it, if you think back to, you know, our community in the 1920s, there was no TV, there was no radio. They didn't know anything about the Klan. All they knew, but you got to understand, the Klan restarted in 1915.
Okay.
And the earlier Klan was mostly a Southern thing. So here we have this group of people showing up saying we are a fraternal organization and we are here to serve our communities. They also went on to say the American flag, Old Glory, represents to the Klansmen the price paid for American liberties. It is the symbol of the Constitution of the United States of America, free speech, free press, free schools, free worship, and all constitutional laws. They were telling everybody in their literature that they upheld the American flag. And then their robe, their mask. The Klansman hides his individuality with the mask and sinks into the great sea of Klancraft, not as individuals, but as Klansmen. Do they sacrifice and serve? The motto of the Klan is non silbis et anthar, meaning not for self, but for others. So if you were someone in the community who actually received such a mail out in your mail, you would read this and go, gosh, that's what I believe in too.
Right.
God, country, and just laws. So why wouldn't I want to belong to an organization like this? This is exactly the basis of my family and my community.
Now, when you started the when we started the discussion, you had talked about how it related to today's times.
Mm-hmm.
And in so many respects, too, I can see that, you know, tugging at the strings of the people that, you know, giving them the words that they want to hear. And the
right.
Yeah.
And then they play on the fear of people, because if you're standing there saying this is what we stand for, the cross, the Bible, you know, standing up for the U.S. flag and the Constitution. And, you know, here are all these people, this mass migration of people from Europe to America was happening at that time,
right?
Mostly from Catholic countries. So you've got huge numbers of Catholics coming in. You've got Jews who are fleeing Russia and the pogroms in Russia. You've got other foreign individuals coming in. You've got communists that are starting to, you know, be homeborn or coming from Russia, trying to change people's way of thinking in terms of how government should be run. These were things people feared. They feared for their jobs. They feared for their communities. They feared that their way of life would change. They were particularly afraid that the Pope was going to run the country.
Really? And I want to step back a bit because relating this to government, there was an outrage in the Carolinas after the war, and the Democrats were losing their grip on the South, and it was going to the Republicans.
Which war are we talking about?
The Civil War. And okay. And then when they were having problems with the KKK, and they had asked Congress for some help to stop the upsurge of the KKK, and I believe there were a couple laws that were passed.
Yes, the Force Acts.
Yeah, and one of them was the
Ku Klux Klan Act
of 1871.
Correct.
Which was meant to suppress the Ku Klux Klan, among other...
to prosecute it for their crimes. Right. Absolutely. The thing to bear in mind is that back in the, and I find this absolutely fascinating, being, you know, coming from Canada and coming here and learning about American history as I have, that the Republicans were the party that supported the freedom of African Americans.
Well, the
Democrats did not.
Right. It was they were the party of Lincoln.
They were the party of Lincoln, and in fact, the Ku Klux Klan actively sought out and terrorized Republicans who supported the freedom of slaves.
Right.
So, you know, it was an interesting period in which Republicans were seen as being very forward-thinking, were seen as being the champions of the people, were seen as protecting those that couldn't protect themselves. It's kind of a little different today.
I don't know. I don't know. We can
get into that debate another day.
Well, that's a whole other thing. But but even with that being said, recently Strom Thurmond. I mean, people in the Congress that were active in the Ku Klux Klan were serving in our Congress up until recently.
Correct. And you know, that's something that they are part of the third incarnation of the Klan, because the one that was started in 1915 kind of fizzled out by 1930. You know, and part of the reason was, you know, there was a lot of internal strife and bickering within the Klan at that time. It got so huge.
Also, the Great Depression kind of...
That had nothing to do with the falling of... Nothing specifically about that. I know people say that the Depression caused it, but I don't think that's the real reason. I think that the reason the Klan fell apart is that they really served no particular purpose. You know, if you think about fraternal organizations, they actually have a code of ethics that they believe in, and they actually do something in the community.
Right.
And so when men and women, because there was a very large female component, there was over 500,000 women that belonged to the Klan during this period, because they were the organizers. They're the ones that were great fundraisers. So they always had to have your women's component to a fraternal organization. And they really didn't do anything, you know. They didn't champion a particular thing other than hatred and bigotry towards groups that were not white and Protestant.
Okay.
And, you know, you've got to believe that most people in our community saw through that in time, and I believe they did. There were still some, of course, who were bigots through and through from the beginning to the end, but a lot of people were curious. A lot of people were interested in finding out what was going on. They attended the initial crossfire, you know, the burning of the cross ceremonies, but they would always get just a handful that may be interested in membership at the end of the day. And membership was like $10, and then you had to pay a dollar or two a year after that. And you were required to do certain things, such as, you know, raise money in order to send money down to the headquarters and into the, you know, the state coffers and things like that. And that's where this, one of the main reasons that people became disillusioned as well, is that there was quite a bit of fraud and pilfering occurring at the state level in the treasuries of the Ku Klux Klan.
Okay.
So, you know, that was another reason when people found out that the money that they were raising was being really stolen at that level, that really bothered them a great deal. And then there was a very high-level Klansman in Indiana who was in the late 20s convicted of raping and murdering a young woman. And this stood against everything that the Klan said that they were.
I guess I don't get that. What did the Klan say that they were if they weren't into raping and pillaging? I guess.
Well, this was a white woman. This wasn't a black woman.
Oh, a white woman.
Right.
Okay, I didn't get that part.
Yes. So he actually did this. He was a high-level Indian Klansman. And, you know, you're supposed to protect the virtue of the white women. You're supposed to protect your community. That's why you're running off the bootleggers.
Okay.
That's why you're running off the undesirables in town, was because you wanted society to be cleaner and nicer and, you know, protected. And all of a sudden you have this high-profile thing going on in the newspaper of this man. You also had government at a high level. The presidents didn't really support Klansmen, and there was a lot of pressure to root out and to force the resignation of high-level politicians and judges out of the Klan. They felt it did not represent American. And the newspapers fought back. They fought back heavily. There's one particular thing that was in the Catskill Recorder, October 17th, 1924.
All right.
The Ku Klux Klan slogan is America for Americans. It would be hard on all of us if this could be acted on, for every man, woman, and child in the United States, except the Indians, would be forced to emigrate and leave America to the only true Americans whose ancestors were here when the white man came and took this country from its savage owners. So these are the types of things that would show up in the newspapers that were fighting back against the propaganda coming from the Klan. But on the other hand, we had all kinds of other articles that were popping up that are kind of interesting. I found in the Caro Herald of July 24th, 1924, it is reported that the Ku Klux Klan burned two crosses at South Durham Sunday night. A visit from the KKK to Acre would not be amiss. Found in the Catskill Recorder in April 1923 edition under the section for Kuiemans. Excitement prevailed here about 10 o'clock on Saturday night when three fiery crosses appeared, one on the bluff fronting Blaisdell's Grove, south of the village, one on Indian Hill, about due west, and one on the cliff west of Ravina. At the same time, three were seen burning on the east bank of the river near Skodak, and persons who visited the locations of the fires in this vicinity on Sunday morning found Ku Klux Klan literature scattered about. So, you know, this is the kind of stuff that was in there. So you had this Ku Klux Klan interest. We even had Cotterskill, January 29th, 1926, Catskill Recorder. The Green County Brotherhood Club, in brackets, the Ku Klux Klan, asked the privilege of holding a meeting in our chapel last Friday evening, and it was well attended. So, you know, you see that people were interested in finding out who they were. But then they had to make the decision whether they believed their rhetoric, whether they believed what they were saying and what they were doing, and if they could afford the $10. $10 back in the day was not a little bit of amount of money.
Well, that's what I, when at the beginning of the conversation also, and I go back to it, was I think a lot of this is based on fear and power. And I think by these groups, they can get this the $10. They can, you know, they go into the organization, and then it gets pilfered. But a lot of this uprising and growing is because of the power, is because of the money, and it is because of the fear. It's the fear of somebody that's different from you, and it's also the fear of you losing what you once had that you thought was right. So those...
Well, you know, if you have a whole bunch of people, the Irish reviled it for a very long time.
Irish,
the Italians
Catholic, yeah.
were reviled, and they were Catholic, and they were also from those two countries. And when those groups came to our communities, they were not treated well initially either. And it was because they were different. They spoke differently. They looked differently. They practiced their faith differently. They had different customs. It was not the Puritan, Anglo-Saxon, American way. But interestingly enough, if you look at some of the membership lists from the clans that I've looked at, and I have found the records for Prattsville. They're up in the State Library in Albany.
Right.
I found the records for the Sleepy Hollow Clavern, which are in private hands here in Greene County, and I've looked at them. I've not found the records for Coxsackie, and I'm sure if anybody in the listening audience knows where they are, I sure would love to hear from you. If you look at the names, some of them are not Anglo-Saxon names, but these folks have probably been here for a generation or two or longer, and you know, consider themselves full-blooded Americans because they were born here. And that was the thing. It wasn't what your last name was. It was whether you were born in America.
Okay.
And you were Protestant and you were white. Then you could belong to the Klan.
Now, when we get into the civil rights movement, is that when the third popped up?
Yes. So the second one kind of fizzled out.
Around the time of the Depression?
Before the Depression,
Before the Depression,
yeah.
Okay.
In Greene County, the experience is that to my knowledge, all three of them were defunct by 1929.
Okay.
Okay, which is when the stock market crashed.
Right.
So that's why in this experience in Greene County, it wasn't the Depression that brought about the end of those particular organizations. I saw a notation where they were getting a notice down in 1928 to burn their holy Bibles.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm going, why did that happen? There's nothing else telling me why that notification came from headquarters to burn their official Bibles.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, everything was done.
Okay.
There was just no more meetings. You go from, okay, we met at so-and-so's house because they never were able to raise the funds to open up a building because they never had a large enough membership to be able to support that. And then all of a sudden you see where you have a certain number of men, and it could be like 20, and then you just see them not coming anymore. They just kind of filter away.
Okay.
Because they're not talking about anything. Their meeting minutes are about how do we send more money to headquarters, how do we make money to get a building up. You know, there's all those kinds of things that were being discussed, but nothing else.
Okay.
You know, maybe they were going to go over to so-and-so's house and cut wood so they would have, because they got hurt and they couldn't cut wood for the winter.
Okay.
You know, they were the same kinds of things other fraternal organizations were doing in the community, so why belong to them? So they kind of, I think, lost their vision here because we didn't have the same racial tensions here that we had in the South.
Okay.
So they fizzled away, and they were pretty much gone, you know, by 1930s, early 1930s. And, of course, the Depression at that point certainly had an impact. People had other things to worry about than belonging to organizations. But the next incarnation was started up in the after 1945. So it's the third incarnation. And it's estimated that there's between 5 and 8,000, so only between 5 and 8,000 people who actually belongs to the current incarnation of the Klan, who is a very strong organization in terms of their passion for their belief. And were very prominent during the 1960s, you know, desegregation and the civil rights movement. And we, even as a child in Canada, I remember the pictures on the TV, you know, the lynchings, the intimidation, the beatings,
the hosing
of not only African Americans, but anybody who supported them. Because if you were white and you walked with the black group who were protesting, you were considered no different than them and were attacked equally as vengefully and as the African Americans were. So yeah, that was a much different thing, and we didn't see that up here. We don't really have in the North the same kind of attachment to the Klan that the South does, which really harkens back to the Civil War period and the sense of the South having lost their identity and because of having lost the war. And so we don't have the same experience here that the South has. And I think anybody that lives down in the South and has lived up here and vice versa would tell you the same thing.
Well, and I have lived in the South. I have lived in South Carolina and North Carolina. And it is really a different culture in so many different respects that it's so entrenched in the society for so long that so many things haven't changed, and it still pops up, and you can just see how people treat each other or how things are segregated in certain respects. And it's still pretty prevalent in a lot of different ways.
It is. And I think what is of concern to me today is that I read not too long ago that Klan literature was being distributed in Fulton County.
Mm, okay.
And that really concerns me.
It was of recently.
Recently.
Well,
and towards kids in school.
Well, I mean, even it's kind of fragmented into neo-Nazi and right-wing extremist organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And the Klan, I believe, is estimated to have between 6,000 to 10,000 active members. Still mostly.
Okay.
It's gone, yeah, mostly in the Deep South.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I agree with you. It's really fragmented, but they work together. They have different reasons that they exist, but they have the same goal, which is, you know, white supremacy at the end of the day, and that the non-dilution of the race.
And I think that's still, I mean, even with the discussions today with the police being active with that, and I know I am not in any way saying that it's, I guess it, the police, I bring that up just because that's just part of it. That's part of the society where there's, I think, in some respects, people aren't treated the same. And I mean, that's part and parcel of what we're talking about now. But there's such, I guess I bring that up because with football and how people are still protesting that, it's like, it's still living in so many different areas of our life, be it political, you know, be it educational, be it living, housing, everything revolves around that in so many different ways. And well, it's sad how it's all trickled down and...
Well, you know, everybody has the right to their opinion. I think that's what makes us Americans.
Right.
And when you take away that right, then we're already stripping away who we are as a country,
right.
I think. And we're stripping away democracy. When we tell people you have to do something a certain way,
right.
And we're not talking about thou shalt not kill or thou shalt not, you know, beat somebody up. We're talking about a person's right to protest, a person's right to express their opinion about something. When we tell them they can't do that,
right.
Who have we become?
Right.
That really, really concerns me. And yeah, you know, so I have my own opinion about the kneeling thing about, you know, during the football season and that sort of thing.
But we don't need to go.
We're not going
to
go there.
Yeah, we're not going to.
But, you know, at the end of the day, it is about who we are as a country and who we want to be as time goes forward.
Yep.
And, you know, if we think back to the ideals of the country when it was first formed, and it was about, and it was an imperfect union back then. They said it was an imperfect union. They knew that there was work that had to be done, you know. And so I think it's also an issue where we have an opportunity to learn from the past, learn what needs to change, not fear what happened in the past, but realize that it is a playbook for us to know how we can change future behavior.
Right. You are so awesome. Okay, well, is there anything else we need to add to this here? You got anything else? We're pretty much got a wrap on it or what?
I don't know. I have something. It's a poem that I thought was really kind of cool.
Okay.
The Klan actually in New York had established something called the Clarion Call. It was their own newspaper, and people wrote for it. So they would say, you know, demonstration at Buffalo, make up your mind about the future by writing in about your thoughts about something. And this woman, Mrs. Charlotte Volk from the Pen Yan unit, wrote this rather interesting poem about the Ku Klux Klan.
Okay.
Oh, and before we leave this, and this is something I wanted to say, is people have asked me, what does Ku Klux Klan mean? And people think that the word Ku Klux Klan comes from the Greek word kuklos, which means circle.
Okay.
And certainly the Klan always viewed themselves as a circle of brothers.
Okay.
With a vision and a mission. Whether we like it or not, that's kind of like the origin of the word. And I just didn't want to lose the opportunity of sharing that.
Okay.
But if you have a, you know, it takes about 2 minutes to read this poem. So if you've got
go for it. Yes,
okay,
we
great.
Got
it's,
it.
I just found it fascinating. It was actually interesting poetry, but what she says, I think, is even more interesting. So Charlotte wrote, "I wish to express as best I can the truth in defense of the Ku Klux Klan. My soul is aflame with the subject dear. May God be my helper to make it clear. It is said that our hearts are full of hate. Please let us that subject a while debate. We believe in God and our public schools, but stand in defiance of Satan's tools. We love our flag and its history cherish. 'Tis our heritage dear and must never perish. We believe in womanhood pure and true. We are not anti-Catholic, Negro, nor Jew, but pro-American through and through. To guide our lives, we read Romans 12. In all God's words, we mentally delve. Can we do these things and hate our brother? We love our God and we love each other. We love the sinner but hate the sin. For the truth we strive and the truth will win. We lift on high our flag and cross. All things not sacred we count as dross. Our God has a work for us to do. I ask, dear friend, can he count on you? Are you willing to stand in the face of danger for the cause of him who is born in a manger? Dare we stand when they hurl at us a brick and stone? If we suffer all this, we are not alone. For we've not forgotten Wycliffe and Huss, nor the thousands of others martyred for us. There was Paul and Peter and Stephen, too, who died for the faith which then was new. When a brave soul stands for truth and right, then Satan assails him with all his might. But so long as his song is the only lay, and so long as his course is the only way, and so long as one wears a streak of yellow, then Satan says, "You're a pretty fellow." When he tries to destroy your home or your church, and you try to give his plans the lurch, he begins to howl in a malicious way, and says, "You're a bum, or perhaps a fay." Just pull from his henchman's barrel and spigot, and hold up the flag and the cross, "You're a bigot." 'Tis recorded in history all through the years, how our freedom was paid for with bloodshed and tears. The faith of our fathers we dare not betray. May the spirit they left here inspire us today. Though the enemy watch and his campfire still smolder, let the clan be on guard, standing shoulder to shoulder. Now let us rededicate all this cause to stand by American justice and laws. Let us keep our hearts and lives so clean that no mean spot shall ever be seen. Let us live our creed to the very letter. Each day our lives will be growing better. And then when the storms of life are past, and we meet in peace and safety at last, with the victory won for truth and right, we shall march up there in robes of white.
That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Okay, well, listen.
I just thought that was quite a fascinating. Wow, somebody would spend the time to put that together, right, and well, justify their bigotry.
Yeah, right. That's a twisted,
your viewpoint. And is that not what it is all about at the end of the day? Bigotry is just saying to yourself that you are right and others are wrong, and then you justify why that is the case.
Well, painting the false picture is what it is.
And
it's,
right.
And which can lead you into doing what you want to do, even though it's the wrong thing, and that's what it
right.
is.
And so I would just like to offer that I've written an article for the Greenville Pioneer on the Ku Klux Klan and what we've been talking about today.
Okay.
And it'll be in the newspaper this Friday and also online at greenvillepioneer.com.
And you enriched us very much with this knowledge, and I appreciate that because I think it's very important that we get that out there. Thank you for showing up.
And thank you, Pete.
Happy Canadian Thanksgiving.
and happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Thank
so
you.
Enjoy, hold your family close, and enjoy your turkey.